Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Governed by God, a biblical look at law, civics, and government. My name is Eric Leupold. Thank you for joining me on today's episode. So today, what I want to do is address a pretty controversial topic, or at least a topic that is quite relevant, and that has very often been in the news, and that is the issue of immigration. Now, Christians are often divided on this topic, and like I said, it is a sensitive topic because it involves the question of what does it mean to love our neighbor? And so as Christians, it's very important that we think through this carefully and biblically. Now, when it comes to the question of immigration, we need to actually start at the most fundamental idea or the most fundamental concept, kind of asking the very basic questions of the topic before we can move on to something complicated. So, for example, here's a question that we should ask ourselves when we're thinking about immigration, because what is immigration? Really, at its heart, it is discussing the movement of peoples. Can peoples move from one place to another? So the question that we should ask ourselves is, should we be able to enter any space at any time? Should you be able at any moment to enter into any building and any room for any reason? Is there no place that is off limits to us? Is there no place that has restrictions to me entering? Kind of an extreme case, should I be allowed to enter your house at night without your permission? Should I be able to enter your room without your permission, your bedroom, while you're sleeping? And I think everyone agrees and would agree on the fundamental principle that people cannot just go wherever they want to, whenever they want to. Whatever building there is, or land, or rooms, there's going to be restrictions. People can't enter your bathroom when you're using it. We should not be entering the opposite sex locker room, for example. So these are kind of fundamental, simple things that we all agree with, generally speaking, or at least I would say Christians would all agree with the idea that the concept of absolute freedom of movement to go anywhere for any reason at any time does not exist and never has existed. All right, so with that in mind, we know already that there are restrictions to movement. There have to be. Now, going to Scripture here, we see throughout Scripture that people are restricted from access to certain places, restricted in their movements. We see in the book of Genesis that God removed Adam and Eve from his presence in the garden because of their sin. And they were prevented from entering again. In Genesis 3:24, it says, "He, God, drove out the man, and at the east of the Garden of Eden, he placed the cherubim and a flaming sword that turned every way to guard the way to the tree of life." So right there, we have, if you would want to put it this way, the very first refugees, Adam and Eve, fleeing the garden, unable to return. Now, if we continue on with Scripture, we see other concepts like the temple or the tabernacle or the Holy of Holies. And in all of these situations, only certain people at certain times with permission could enter. And this was true not only for where God dwelled in the temple or the tabernacle, but it was also true with private property. So, for example, in Exodus chapter 22, verse 2, the law states that if a thief is found breaking in and is struck so that he dies, there shall be no blood guilt for him. So the idea there is that not everyone is allowed to go into your house at night without permission. And if the homeowner has a hostile reaction and defends himself, and there's a struggle of some kind, there's no blood guilt that's incurred by the homeowner. And then in a similar fashion, in Deuteronomy chapter 24, where the law talks about giving pledges, and so pledges essentially going into debt. You basically say that you are offering this item as a pledge, that you're going to pay back the loan that you took or the money that you borrowed from somebody else. But it says this, it says, when you make your neighbor a loan of any sort, you shall not go into his house to collect his pledge. You shall stand outside, and the man to whom you make the loan shall bring the pledge out to you. Okay, so that has nothing to do with breaking and entering, but it does say this. It does say that even in a situation where a person owes you money and they make a promise that they're going to pledge something as an indication that they're going to pay it back, you are not allowed to go into their house and get it. That would be dishonoring and shameful for the person. So you are to honor them and let them bring it out to you. So these are just a couple examples of the restrictions on movement that God put in place for Israel and that exist all throughout Scripture. Now, what's interesting today in our modern culture is that we demand absolute freedom. Our culture is demanding absolute freedom. Freedom to say whatever they want. Freedom to do whatever they want. There's no limits. And what's interesting is that it is now spilling over into issues of movement. We now demand absolute freedom of movement to the point that men can go into women's locker rooms. Women can go into men's locker rooms. Men can play on women's sports teams. There should be no restrictions on access to anything of any kind. And to deny that access is to infringe upon a person's right, my right, to go where I want and to do what I want. Along with this demand for absolute freedom of movement, we now have a demand almost for open borders, where there are to be no restrictions on immigration because, quote unquote, that's the loving thing to do. But let's begin from small to large. We already looked at some of the fundamental questions of movement. It's pretty clear from an individual level that I cannot go wherever I want. I cannot go into a secure facility with top secret information without the proper access and authorization. And I cannot go into a bank vault without proper access and, as an employee of the bank or something like that. So there's some things you just cannot do at an individual level, and we have no problem with that. Well, but let's apply it now to the group or the corporate level. What does the Bible say about large group movements? Well, in the old days, when the earth was sparsely populated, we could say that perhaps it was no man's land. The land was unoccupied. And in those cases, what you see happening is kind of the sharing of the land, and they kind of figure it out themselves. So an example would be in Genesis 13, where Abram and Lot kind of agree to go their separate ways. Abram says to Lot, he says, "Let there be no strife between you and me, and between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. If you take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if you take the right hand, then I will go to the left." And so they kind of split up the land, and they have a mutual agreement that they're just going to go their separate ways in order to avoid conflict with each other. But aside from that, most of the time, even in Genesis, to enter the land that was already occupied, that someone already had rights over or sovereignty over, required permission. So for an example, with Abraham and Abimelech in Genesis chapter 20, after the dream that Abimelech has, where Abraham pretended that his wife Sarah was his sister, but Abimelech says to him, "Behold, my land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you." Okay, so Abimelech gives permission to Abraham to stay in the land. And the same thing happens to the people of Israel with Joseph and Pharaoh. Joseph is working for Pharaoh, basically the second in command. And in Genesis 47, Pharaoh gives permission for Israel and all the sons and the family and the household to settle. He says this, he says, "Pharaoh said to Joseph, 'Your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. Settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land. Let them settle in the land of Goshen, and if you know any able men among them, put them in charge of my livestock." So again, here Israel is given permission to enter the land of Egypt and to live there. Now, the question that comes up quite often is, well, what about Israel invading the land of Canaan? They didn't get permission from the peoples there. That was God had given it to them. And I would say, yes, God had promised it to Israel. And here's the key, is that all of the land of the planet belongs to God. So he is allowed to give it to whomever he wills. And so he chose hundreds of years earlier, by the way, before Israel even entered the land, he chose to give that land over to Israel. And it wasn't because Israel was so righteous, but he vomited out of the land and removed from the land the Canaanites and those dwelling there because of their sin and their iniquity. He even tells Israel that it's not because they're so great that they have God's blessing and are given the land. It is because the nations in this land are so wicked. And if Israel were to do those wicked things too, they themselves would be vomited out. Now, that being said, it is interesting that there were only certain people groups that this applied to. What I mean is, when Israel was given over the land, they were not given over any land. They were given a specific land, and they were allowed to wage war against a specific people group, the Canaanites, okay? And they were not allowed to invade Edom, the land of Esau. And in Numbers chapter 20, verse 14 through 21, we see that Moses sends messengers to the king of Edom asking for permission to go through his land in order to get to the land of Canaan. And he even says, please let us pass through your land. We will not pass through field or vineyard or drink water from a well. We will go along the king's highway. We will not turn aside to the right or to the left until we have passed through your territory. But the king of Edom says no, basically. He says, you will not pass through. And essentially, even though Israel offers to pay money for access through their land, Edom says no. And so Israel turns away. Israel has to go around, and they honor that decision. They don't force it and say, well, we've been given the land of Canaan by God, and we need to get there, so you need to let us in, or we're going to force our way through. No, Israel honors their Edom's refusal and has to go around. And interestingly, Israel even asks the Amorites and King Sihon as their ruler for permission to cross his land. And that's in Numbers chapter 21. It says this, it says, Israel sent messengers to Sihon, king of the Amorites, saying, let me pass through your land. We will not turn aside into field or vineyard. We will not drink the water of a well. We will go by the king's highway until we have passed through your territory. So you see here is that the land of Sihon was not originally given to Israel. But when they ask this question, Sihon responds with violence. It says, Sihon gathered all his people together and went out against Israel to the wilderness and came to Jahaz and fought against Israel. So basically, Sihon's launching a preemptive attack against Israel. He's not even just saying no. He's coming out to war. And Israel engages in self-defense. And when King Sihon is defeated, then essentially all the land of his passes into possession of the people of Israel. Even there, we see Israel asking permission, even from pretty wicked people, to go through their land peacefully. All right, so now, what about loving our neighbor, right? I mean, we need to love the stranger and the sojourner. We need to love these people. God does command that, right? And that's correct. That is very true. So what we need to keep in mind, though, is that our neighbor is everybody around us. Loving our neighbor includes not violating the property of our neighbor and not allowing others to violate the property of our neighbor. So allowing or encouraging trespassing is not loving our neighbor, or forcing our neighbor to support someone financially that they don't want to support. That is also not loving our neighbor, forcing them to be quote-unquote generous. You can't force generosity. So that's a problem there. And also, Scripture does talk about loving the stranger and the sojourner, it does not talk about who is to be let in. Okay, it doesn't really address the issue of border policies. Okay, it does speak about how to treat strangers and sojourners who are living there. So, for an example, in Leviticus chapter 24, verse 22, it says that there are supposed to be equal standards for the stranger and the native. Okay, and Numbers 15 is just as explicit about it. In Numbers 15, verses 15 and 16, it says this. It says, "For the assembly, there shall be one statute for you and for the stranger who sojourns with you, a statute forever throughout your generations. You and the sojourner shall be alike before the Lord. One law and one rule shall be for you and for the stranger who sojourns with you." All right, so what that means is equal standards. The law applies to everybody. So there's no special treatment in that regard. If a stranger breaks the law, he gets punished. If a native breaks the law, he gets punished. And oh, by the way, that includes treason. All right, so a native in Israel was not allowed to speak against God and the covenant that God made with Israel, or there would be discipline for that. And the same is true for the stranger. The stranger and the sojourner is supposed to honor the laws of the land, even if they don't have the same religion as Israel does. They are to honor the laws that Israel has in the land. Okay, so you need to honor the laws of the land that you're going to. And in the land of Israel, even sojourners and strangers can be cut off from the land. It says this, it says, "But the person who does anything with a high hand, sinning, whether he is native or a sojourner, reviles the Lord, and that person shall be cut off from among his people. Because he has despised the word of the Lord and has broken his commandment, that person shall be utterly cut off. His iniquity shall be on him." So this is true for the sojourner, the stranger, and the native of Israel. Anyone who sins with a high hand is going to be held accountable for that sin. What is also interesting to see in Scripture is that even though foreigners, strangers, and sojourners were supposed to be treated under the same law, they didn't have the same privileges, okay? So an example would be that in Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 15, when Moses tells Israel, okay, when you select a king, you may do so, but it must be a king from the natives among you. He must not be a foreigner. So right there, you have a requirement. Okay, so as far as leadership goes and authority, it had to be a native Israelite who's in charge. It cannot be a foreigner. Foreigners can also be charged interest in Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 20. But an Israelite could not be charged interest. On a different note, though, the Israelites had to obey all of the food laws. But in Deuteronomy 14:21, foreigners and sojourners did not have to obey the food laws. So Israel was allowed to basically sell or give unclean meat to foreigners and the sojourners. The foreigners were allowed to purchase and eat the meat if they wanted to. That was their decision. Israel was not allowed to do that. So ultimately, we see a distinction made between citizens and non-citizens. They are all under the law regarding, crimes. None of them are to commit crimes, and there's no different standards with that. But there are different privileges for the people of Israel and responsibilities there. Responsibilities as far as like eating clean food, whereas that responsibility is not placed upon the foreigner and the sojourner. Now, other parts of Scripture do talk about walls and borders. And an important theme throughout Scripture is that the lack of walls, the lack of borders, is considered to be a curse and a judgment from God. So in Proverbs chapter 25, verse 28, it says, "A man without self-control is like a city without walls, broken into," right? So that's not a good thing. It's not a good thing. Now, even more explicitly is in the book of Nahum, chapter 3, verses 10 through 13. And this is God's judgment against Nineveh. So this is a non-Israelite city, and God is calling judgment and curses upon Nineveh because of their wickedness. And he says this, he says, "You also will be drunken. You will go into hiding. you will seek a refuge from the enemy. All your fortresses are like fig trees with first ripe figs. If shaken, they fall into the mouth of the eater. Behold, your troops are women in your midst. The gates of your land are wide open to your enemies. Fire has devoured your bars. And he's referring to the bars of your gates. So having your land wide open is not a good thing. That is a curse. And that is, in fact, what the entire book of Nehemiah is about. Because in Nehemiah chapter 2, the prophet Nehemiah is distressed and he's sad that all the walls of Jerusalem have been torn down and that it's completely exposed and it's full of shame and it's just being taken advantage of. So in the book of Nehemiah, he is trying to get permission from the king to go rebuild the walls, and he does. And then at the end of Nehemiah, they dedicate the walls and they rejoice with singing and celebration when the walls have been built. So what's the purpose of walls, though? The purpose of walls is to control movement. That's what they do. By definition, they control movement. And that's going to be either against, you know, invasion, but even just coming and going commerce. It provides order out of chaos. It's a proper way for a city to be organized so that you know who's coming in, who's going, and why they're coming in and why they're going. So with this in mind, let's apply this to a modern nation. At the end of the day, from Scripture, we see that every nation has an obligation to its inhabitants and its citizens. So it's covenantal. Parents have a covenantal responsibility to protect their children. That might mean locking their doors at night. That might mean closing their windows. Okay, that might mean saying no to someone who's coming in. You know, vetting a babysitter, or not just letting anybody sleep in your house, because you have a responsibility to guard and protect your children. It doesn't make you mean. It just, that's what it means to be responsible. Because loving your neighbor is not flat. There's a hierarchy to it. A husband is obligated to love his wife in a different and a more thorough way than he's obligated to love other people's wives. He should not love them the same. And parents are obligated to love their children in a way that's different than how they love other people's children. Okay, they discipline their own children out of love. They don't discipline other people's children. And in the same way, Christians are obligated to love one another. That's the new commandment that Jesus says. He says, this new commandment I give you, love one another. And we are supposed to do good to everyone, but especially to the household of God. So there's supposed to be a priority given to the people of the covenant, the new covenant people. Just like the people of Israel were to have a certain treatment for fellow Israelites, okay, that they were supposed to have a priority for fellow Israelites. They were to love everybody, but there was a priority given to loving their fellow Israelite. So in the same way, our nation is covenantal. A nation is a covenant or a contract. Some people would argue that it's more of a contract, but it's actually more of a covenant. And so we have a responsibility to our fellow citizens to love them with a priority over loving other nations. Okay? So we pay taxes to the United States government. We don't pay taxes to other nations because we're not in covenant with those other nations. We are in covenant with our nation. If our nation calls us up for war, you know, maybe with a draft or whatnot, obligated to respond, right? And we also have privileges as citizens to vote and to elect our leaders. So every nation has an obligation to its own inhabitants and citizens to maintain order and to protect from external threats. Those under its care and covenant are first priority. So the government, just like parents have a primary responsibility for their children, the government of the United States has a primary responsibility for its citizens. That is its primary responsibility. It must bear those responsibilities first before it goes about doing other things, helping the stranger, the sojourner, the foreigner, or other nations. That doesn't mean you mistreat people. It does not mean that. Nope. Anyone who's within the borders of the United States is under the same law and given the same basic human rights. Okay? But the privileges of things such as voting, that goes to citizens, and the government must make sure that it knows who's coming in and who's going and why they're coming in, and it must make sure to protect its citizens from those less savory individuals who might try to come in and do bad things. So that is why open borders is an unsustainable thing. It's actually a curse. There really is no such thing as absolute freedom of movement. We live like this when it comes to homes and businesses and schools. Just consider the fact that in Washington, people cannot just enter the Capitol building whenever they want to. We saw just how much of an outcry there was when people entered into the Capitol building on January 6th, right? They were denied freedom of movement. Those, you know, should we say that those people should be allowed in because they want to? Well, no. Okay. Well, there's boundaries. There's restrictions. There's order put in place there. Schools have restrictions. Okay. People can't just walk into a school and do whatever they want. Okay. There's always going to be restrictions of movement, and that's true in the local, individual, and national level. And that doesn't mean, though, that we're not loving the foreigner or the alien or the stranger or the sojourner. Putting in rules and restrictions is not unloving. Our culture thinks it's unloving, that any kind of rule or restriction is considered mean and just hurtful and nasty. But that's not true. And in fact, when we incentivize mass migration, when we encourage large groups of people to move from one country to another, that actually increases the risk for them. It's not good for them. It's easier for those people to be taken advantage of on the way. There is nothing more vulnerable than a person who's traveling between countries. That is a very vulnerable situation to put yourself in. And we should not encourage that, especially if we know that the journey is going to be quite dangerous and quite risky for those people. We want them to succeed. We want those people to do well. But ultimately, what we want are those countries to put themselves in order. Those nations that are destabilized, we want them to become stable. Stability is a good thing throughout the entire world, not just stability in one place and instability in every other place. That's not a good situation. So in the end, the issue of immigration really needs to be thought through carefully. And Christians really should not be advocating for open borders. It's not found in Scripture. It's not there. It's not a good thing. So I would encourage you, if you are a Christian and you are very much, you don't like the idea of a wall or a border or border patrol or deportation, you have to ask yourself, does the text of Scripture really support your position or kind of the other side? Anyways, with that, I hope that you found this episode helpful and thoughtful, and I would encourage you to think through this topic of immigration and to look at Scripture, look at history, and just logically think through it and reach your own conclusions then. But if you have any questions or comments or other thoughts on this particular topic that you would like to ask me, I'm happy to address them. Just email me at thegbgpodcast@gmail.com or go on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, find the GBG Podcast or Governed by God, and you can message me there. And so again, thank you for joining me. And until next time, take care and God bless.